You're listening to Chasing Prophecy Radio, where we discuss anything and everything beyond the scope of normal. On UPRN Talk Radio, FM 107.7 in New Orleans and FM 105.3 in Mississippi.
If it's unexplainable, we're talking about it.
Whether you're a believer or a skeptic,
we cover everything where the unknown becomes the known.
And now, here are your hosts, Jenny Nicasio and Tom Callaway.
Welcome to Chasing Prophecy on FM 107.7 in New Orleans and 105.3 in Henderson Point, Mississippi, where we discuss anything and everything beyond the scope of normal. I'm Jenny Nicasio, along with my fabulous co-host, Tom Callaway.
Yes, how's it hello. Going tonight? Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just getting ready. I got
I noticed that.
You see?
Yeah,
wonderful. Got my glasses for the give big you old many. Lips.
It's like you're going into a 3D movie.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. I'm excited. It also has a I thought for sure I got the right ones. I said, oh shit, is it the 3D one? No, they're the right ones. Solar eclipse glasses. And it has this, if you don't want to wear the glasses, it has this little, I don't know what you
call it. Oh, a monocle.
A monocle. Yeah, there's a lot. It's exciting. I'm really excited. But although we were just discussing before the show that I thought it was the next Monday. Because, yeah, it is next Monday. Yeah, because you're right. I'm a ding dong. So the second is next Tuesday. See, yeah. I was so excited. I thought it was this Monday coming up. But well.
Gotcha.
We'll make sure we have our glasses on. And we should probably, I don't know. Do you remember who we have next week?
Yes, Mark Way.
Now, what is Mark Way? Because I was going to say, if he's, what does he do?
Mark is one of the premier ufologists and experts on metaphysics.
Good. So maybe we can talk about the eclipse with him too.
Yeah. No, he's the encyclopedia. If you want to know about UFOs, ancient UFO history, you know, all of those good biblical drawings and painting. he's a whiz with that.
Well, yeah. Well, this tonight's guest is something I'm looking forward to because I am a big Bigfoot follower. And so there's a lot of strange things, especially I know a lot of weird stuff happened through in Pennsylvania by the Appalachians.
Chestnut Ridge.
Chestnut Ridge. Oh, that's so funny. I had a dentist appointment today and my old dentist was at Chestnut Ridge. That's so funny.
Oh, how could you forget that?
I know. How can I forget that? But we're going to have a lot to talk about tonight because Brian King Sharp is a host of a multiple hit podcast, including the Sasquatch Odyssey, True Crime Odyssey, and that Bigfoot podcast, and newly launched Black Backwoods Horror Stories. Oh boy, that sounds fun. With a global ranking in the top 1-3%. Wow. How'd you do that one? I want to know about that, Brian. Well, Brian is one of the top content creators in the world. Had I known, I would have called you earlier. You could have worked on some things for me. His background in law enforcement spanning over 16 years adds an additional layer to Brian's fresh, unique perspective to the world of Sasquatch research. Beyond his podcasting success, Brian has gained recognition for his knowledge and insight into the world of Sasquatch, better known as Bigfoot. He has been featured on Vice and Tubo Network. Really? I'm going to have to watch it. Television shows, captivating audiences with his knowledge of storytelling and proudness. As a sought-after speaker of the Sasquatch conferences worldwide, Brian's credibility in the field is well established. Well, that's good to know. And Brian King Sharp shows, outlines, top questions. Okay, we're going to get back to that. But let me now tell you this before we get on the show. I just want to let everybody know we're broadcasting on multiple platforms, including YouTube, Facebook, I think Twitch. Oh, there's a number of them. So if you're in the comments, and I hope you are, because I can't see that yet. I am too. Okay, we have some comments, and I wasn't even paying attention. So hello, Joe Fox. And make sure if you have a comment to post it in the chat, and we will put you up on the screen. So let's introduce Brian to the show. How do you do, sir?
Hello, Brian.
Hello, folks. How are y'all?
Good.
I'm so excited to have you on the show tonight.
That introduction, I feel like I've got big shoes to fill. I was like, who are they talking about? Oh, that
must be- that's you.
That sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Kind of scary.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff there going on. So how did you get started in this? I know law enforcement. Were you interested in stuff like
I've always been interested in it from a very early age. I was born and raised in North Georgia. I grew up in the mountains of North Georgia, hearing stories about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the hairy man. And I was always fascinated with those stories. I loved the Loch Ness Monster. It was probably my favorite cryptid growing up as a kid. It got me interested. Everybody loved Nessie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had an experience when I was 12 years old. I was living in a haunted house, which was, that's a whole nother story. But I also had an experience in the woods that really, looking back, knowing what I know now, I can't say it was a Bigfoot, can't say it was Sasquatch because I didn't see anything, but I believe I was bluff charged and possibly paced out of the woods by one of these things.
Oh, my God.
And it was a really scary experience, but it drove me to want to know more about what I had experienced. So that spurred me on. And then obviously I grew up, I always wanted to be either I wanted to be a famous country music star.
Sound like one.
I've sang all of my life. I sang in bands from a very early age. I did an album about 10 years ago. I went up to Nashville and actually recorded a country album, but there's a reason I'm a podcaster. It didn't do so great. I didn't have the conviction to do what it takes to make it in the music business. So I shifted gears, and I was a full-time police officer at that time anyway, but I grew up and wanted to be a cop. That was the other thing that I always wanted to do. And I followed that passion and got into law enforcement and eventually landed at the City of Atlanta Police Department. And I left there in 2016. And once I left the police department, I've said that famously on lots of other shows, and I talk about it on my show. You don't really talk about, I've had UFO experiences. I've seen a UFO. I lived in a haunted house, possibly had a Sasquatch experience, was very into Bigfoot and Sasquatch, but you don't really talk about that as a cop. You know, you're trying to arrest people. You're doing your job. You're going to court and testifying. I did a lot of DUI. I did a DUI arrest for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Those defense attorneys will look for anything to discredit you on the stand, right? So you don't want to be known as the guy who's into Bigfoot and UFOs. And, you know, it goes to your credibility in some cases. So I didn't really talk about that as a cop. But after I left that in 2016, I was able to really dive into getting back into the subject. And I wanted to have our own property. You know, we lived in Atlanta at the time. We had a house in East Atlanta, and we sold that, and we traveled for a little bit, and then we looked for property, and we ended up with 40 acres here in North Carolina because I wanted to have some wooded land that I could actually do research on. That, you know, what are the chances of there possibly being some big hairy bipedal hominid on your property? But I wanted to have a place I could get out into the woods and do the research that I wanted to do. And we've had some really strange experiences here that I really can't explain over the last 5 or 6 years of owning the property. We've lived here full-time now about 4 years. So yeah, that's kind of what got me into it. And then, you know, I'd never listened to podcasts, and I was at work. I was working full-time in retail. After I left that, I got into retail management, and I was running a super hub for a very large automotive company here in North Carolina. And I hated my job. I really hated my job. It was killing me, 50 hours plus a week. And I wanted to be doing Bigfoot stuff. And somebody said, hey, have you ever listened to Bigfoot podcasts? So I got into a Bigfoot, specifically a Bigfoot Encounters podcast. And I was hooked. I knew then that's what I wanted to be doing. I wanted to talk to people who had those experiences because I'm very skeptical. I have a cop brain. I have to see it to believe it. I'm a very Occam's razor kind of guy. I'm a scientific method kind of dude. You got to show me the evidence. So I started listening to these podcasts, and I thought, I've got to talk to some of these people who have had those experiences, right? Excuse me. So I was like, I want to talk to people. I got into Facebook groups. I started looking to people that said, hey, I've had these experiences. And I thought, I've got to document this some way. right? So why don't I record it? If they're okay with me recording it, let me record it. And then now I've got this audio. What am I going to do with it? I should start a podcast. Had zero clue how to do anything podcast related, but I still got into it. And the rest is history. I posted the first episode of Sasquatch Odyssey back in February of 2021. And hey, there's my buddy Brian from right here in North Carolina. What's up, man? And after I posted the first episode in February, by March of 2022, I left my retail management job behind and started podcasting full time. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
That's wonderful. That we love that story. We love the origin stories of why people do this, because this is still new. I mean, you know, look, it's something that wasn't here 10 years ago that we could be doing this, you know, or to even be, you know, attempting this. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for you for you know, you have a profession, you had a good job, and you wanted to follow a passion. And, you know, you committed even moving out into, you know, different states and things like that. So, you know, my hat's off to you for that. One question is, I'm going to ask you, typically when we think of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know, Pacific Northwest comes to mind, right? Well, you're on the opposite coast. Now we all know stories travel, you know, you have, you know, Skunk Ape and you have Hairy Man and you have all different states have a sort of Bigfoot like creature. Could you expand on North Carolina's version of that?
I've talked to the very first episode of Sasquatch Odyssey was a roadside crossing that a gentleman had here in near the Medoc State Park area. It was episode one, Kale. I'll never forget him. Thanks for getting everything started, Kale. I appreciate that. He gave me an opportunity to hear his story for the first time. And it's very much like what you hear and experience in other places. Now, Pacific Northwest, you tend to, in my experience, you deal with Bergman's rule, right? The farther north you get, the farther away from the equator you get, the larger animals get. So you hear that in Bigfoot. It's no exception with Sasquatch. You hear about people having experiences with 8 to 9 foot tall, hairy, what I believe to be some sort of a relic hominoid. And it's no different really in the eastern part of the country. Florida's a little bit different. You know, we've done stuff. In addition to Sasquatch Odyssey, as you said in the open, I do a lot of podcasts. I host 4 full-time weekly podcasts. And one of those is that Bigfoot podcast with my co-host Wayne. And that's one of the things we talked about recently was what's the difference in what we're seeing in the Pacific Northwest and even places like North Carolina versus Florida. The skunk ape seems to be a smaller version. They seem to be, in my experience, more aggressive in some ways in people's encounters, because the smaller you are as a whatever you are, sometimes you have to be aggressive to survive, right? So that would make sense. But we just did a couple of shows recently and talked about these wild animal, these wild macaques and wild monkeys that are surviving in the Ocala area of Florida. And we've talked about whether some of that could be misidentification for what people believe to be Sasquatch and or skunk ape. So that's one thing to consider, obviously. But North Carolina, really, to answer your question, is not really any different than any other place. I've talked to people in North Carolina who have seen what they consider to be white, possibly albino Sasquatch, which is a really rare thing in some cases. But it's really not any different than what you're seeing anywhere else. I've actually had, if you're familiar with Bigfoot and Sasquatch, you kind of know the four horsemen of Sasquatchery. Yep. You know, the Peter Burns, those guys. And I think I was the last person to interview Peter before he passed away last year. He came on the show and we kind of disagreed about that because Peter didn't believe that Sasquatch existed east of the Rockies. He didn't think there would be anything in Georgia, Alabama, even in Texas. I mean, he didn't believe they could have ever existed or could exist now, obviously. So we disagreed about that, but I've talked to hundreds of people. I'm about 500 episodes into Sasquatch Odyssey at this point. And a lot of them, because that was sort of the genesis for the show, was for me, because I grew up in the southeastern United States and I wanted to document as many cases as possible in Georgia, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina. So I've talked to a lot of people and it's expanded to around the world. I've had people on from the UK. I've had people on from other parts of the country, you know, out west, whatever. from everywhere, really, that's had some sort of encounter with what they believe to be Sasquatch. So I know that was a really long answer to a short question. But
no, we love it. we love the depth and everything that, you know, comes along, because it shows your passion for this. It shows what, you know, the dedication, and, you know, it takes, I don't know if I can speak for Jenny, but when we come on and we meet somebody in this, you know what I mean? When we meet somebody who's just as dedicated and hardworking, it's hard not to get excited and be like, and what else? And what else? And what else? And things like that.
Most definitely. Do you have any evidence? Did you ever see a Bigfoot? Did you ever get close enough to one? And what happened?
I don't know.
Did we lose him?
I think we did.
But we lost you there for a second. Where'd you go?
Yeah, there he is.
Did you hear what I said?
I did not hear the question because I completely disappeared. I looked up.
I wonder why that happened. I was just saying, do you have any evidence to support Bigfoot in your area? Did you ever get close enough to one? I know you said when you were younger, you might have seen one. Did you get anything captured on video or camera?
No. Here on the property has been nothing but vocalizations. That's how it started.
Okay.
Was hearing really weird. If you're familiar with the Ohio Howl from Matt Moneymaker back in the early 90s, that really long sort of siren type sound. We bought the property here. We bought our first 20 acres back in, I think, towards the end of 2017. And we ended up with another 20 acres about a year later. And we moved up here, and like I said, we've been here about four years full time. We live in a 400 square foot tiny house. So we put the tiny house out here, and then we put a hot tub on the end of the deck. We have a lot of outdoor space, obviously. And that first like fall and going into winter, we were here. We spent a lot of time in the hot tub at night. I was doing the show at that point. So I'd finish up with the show. I'd usually have late night interviews. We'd get in the hot tub, have a glass of wine, and wind down. And that's the first thing that we experienced, was this really distant, I would estimate maybe a mile and a half behind us, because we're surrounded by nothing but hundreds of acres of property. There's nothing around us. Our nearest neighbor is about a half a mile away. And on either side of us, front, back, around, there's nothing but open land. There's no houses. And behind us, there's probably another 300 to 400 acres. And from that direction, we would hear, the first thing we heard was, it was very faint at first. It was that like long, like, oh, sort of how the Ohio Howl starts. And I'm thinking, what the hell was that? Right. And you just kind of chalk it up. You know, I'm a Bigfoot guy, but I thought, that's weird. It kind of sounds weird, but it could be anything. And we've heard that over that course of maybe that first year and a half, we might've heard that five or six times. And it was never anything definitive. I was finishing up the show. I had finished up the show one night, and it was, I guess it would be the following year, maybe March or April. It was still just going into spring. It was one of those nights where it's 50 degrees outside. Our loft where we sleep upstairs is nothing but windows. So we had the windows open. I was finishing up some show notes, and my better half was reading a book or something, and we're just doing our thing. And probably 50 yards, I'd estimate 40, 50 yards away from the house in the woods on the opposite direction from where we had heard the other stuff, was the same sort of sound, but much closer.
Oh.
And 50 yards away, we felt it. We felt it and heard it. And it was the strangest thing. And every time I tell this, I know people immediately go to, it was some sort of a canid. It was a dog, or it was a whatever. It was almost like this little on the end, like a bark at the end of the sound, which I'd never really heard, or I'd never really heard anybody say, but it was definitely not a coyote. It was definitely not anything I'm familiar with. And it's the proverbial, if you're into Bigfoot stories or encounter stories, you hear people say, you know, it sounded like an owl, but it was an 800 pound owl. Well, this is, I mean, it felt huge because it was something we felt and heard.
Yeah, like with that gruff on the end, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would interpret that as maybe a little bit of aggression too, right?
Yeah, it could be. I never really even thought about that, to be honest with you.
Like that, I'm just thinking like maybe in the terms of more of a canine, you know, going back to there, that, you know what I mean? Like it wanted to put an extra emphasis on letting you know it was there. So to me, maybe there was a little aggression behind it, whether it was to you or to some other thing, you know.
Thanks, Tom. That makes me feel so much
better. Oh, gee, I'm sorry. Yeah, great.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty definitive to me. You know, I know a lot of
people. Maybe it was a mating call.
Oh, well, either one might not be good. I
know. Either one could be really scary. But I know a lot of people in Bigfoot, obviously, from doing the show over the years. I've gotten to know a lot of people. And Doug Hychek from Monster Quest. Many people may be familiar with Monster Quest.
Yeah.
Doug produced Monster Quest for years, and Doug has become a good friend of mine. And I reached out to Doug after it happened, and he was like, that's weird. I've never really heard anybody describe it that way. And he starts asking me questions about, do we have water on the property? Yes, we have two creeks that run the entire length of the property. Mm-hmm. He starts going through this litany of sort of his checklist of, could there possibly be Sasquatch activity?
Yeah.
So we go through that, and I don't want to believe that. And I'm better at it now than I was, but I was very apprehensive in the beginning. Obviously, you're the guy who does a Bigfoot podcast, and then you buy land in a rural area, and now you have Bigfoot activity on your property. Yeah. The eye rolls are coming. I can see the eye rolls. Right. So I was very apprehensive about putting anything out there for consumption, but if you listen to my show, you know I'm very upfront. I don't hide my opinions on things. I'm very open and honest, and I ask people to be that way on my show. So I have some, in my opinion, it's part of the job for me to be honest about what's happening with me. So I would run it through a couple of filters and just make sure that I wasn't crazy, and then I would, you know, eventually put it out there. One of the weirdest things that happened after the vocalizations that really made me question what was going on is we obviously have a big property. We have three dogs. Mm-hmm. We walk our dogs every day, several times a day. We go out and play with them. We probably have a half a mile area that we've cut out trails around that we walk the dogs, and we do the same trail, same thing every day, which is kind of important. If you're into Bigfoot research, you'll know that some of the people that are really boots on the ground, I could name several researchers who have tested this so much over the years, is doing the same thing down to sometimes they wear the same clothes going into their research areas because they want to be part of what goes on a daily routine. The more routine you can be, in some people's opinion, the closer you can possibly get to these creatures. So
yeah,
I don't, that's not why I walk the dogs where I walk them. It's just happened. So I just throw that in there to say this may have some bearing on what eventually happened. But long story short, I'm walking the dogs one day. I'd walked them the night before. We had taken them out, did our thing as we always do. The next morning, I got up. We feed them about the same time every day. I walk them. And I walk past this area that's probably, as I sit here now, it's probably 150, maybe 200 yards from where I record the show in the woods. And there's a stump. It's like a cedar stump. It's about maybe 18 inches around. It's old. There's been a lot of logging on the property in years past. We've seen evidence of that. And this log is sort of decaying, right? And something catches my eye in that area. And I look over and it's like this shiny white object. The sun's like gleaming off this shiny white object. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? And the dogs are kind of sniffing around and in that area, which they normally don't do. So I walk over in the side of this stump is a regular, I say regular, but if you're familiar with like box turtle shells, right? They're probably 5 or 6 inches around. It's a bleached, like sun bleached white turtle shell. And it's turned upside down and it's stuck into the side of this stump.
What?
It's on my Instagram. If you guys follow,
like pushed up, in, right?
Like pushed into the side of it. Okay. Right? It's upside down. So the part where the turtle used to be would be facing towards me. And it's stuck into the side of the stump where it's kind of wedged into this little area. And I'm thinking, what in the hell? This wasn't here yesterday. This is new. I didn't see this. I would have seen this because I walk past this every day. And I was dumbfounded. And I pick it up and I'm looking and I'm thinking, and there was this weird, this is something completely different, but it may add a little context to the story. Behind this, I noticed that there was a huge tree that was stuck and wedged sort of between two other trees. And I walked over because that immediately caught my eye too, because I'd never paid attention to it.
a natural.
And I tried to move it. It didn't look natural to me. It didn't look like it had fallen there. I couldn't find a root ball for the tree that was stuck there. It was just kind of weird. So I thought, I'd heard of gifting. Obviously, I'd talked to people about gifting to Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm pretty skeptical about those things, and I never really gave it much credence. So I'm thinking, what? I know animals do that. I know animals, mm-hmm. turtles, they'll turn them upside down and have them on a solid surface like a stump or something to eat what they need. But this was clearly old and it hadn't been there. So it was really weird, but I thought maybe it's a possibility. So I tried a little experiment. I started putting some, not peanut butter jars. We eat sun butter. We eat like ground sunflower seeds. Mm-hmm. So we would finish a couple of those. I actually put some out there. They were completely taken. I had a couple of those taken, completely gone, big jars. Ooh. And I put up a trail cam facing it towards the stump because I wanted to catch whatever was doing it. And I'd heard people, obviously, Todd Standing comes to mind about gifting apples. Other researchers gift apples. So we had a couple of apples that were left over from like the last week at the farmer's market. One of them was getting a little mushy. So I thought, I'm not going to eat this. Let me do this experiment. I'm going to take it out to the stump. I put it on a stick. I stuck the apple on the top of this stick that was probably, I don't know, 15, 16 inches long, just a stick I'd picked up off the ground. I stuck the apple in the middle of this stump, and I'd taken the SD card and the batteries that needed to be changed out of the camera. So of course, like every Bigfoot researcher, there's no pictures to back up anything I'm going to tell you right now. But leading up to that, the apple stayed out there for 3 days. And every single night we got raccoons. I think as many as five at one point was around this stump and this apple. They were on, mm-hmm. my trail cam took still photos and video. So I had all this. I'm thinking, okay, these raccoons have been what's taking the sun butter because they will pick stuff up. I never got that on camera, but I just assumed, you know, I'm using Occam's razor. I've seen raccoons now, so I'm going to say they're what's taking the sun butter. So the apple was out there for about 3 days, I think. And I take the SD card in to change it out and delete the raccoon pictures. And I'm going to put some new batteries in the camera. I didn't do either of those things. I get up the next morning. I walk the dogs. I walk past the stump. And as soon as I came over the little crest of the hill, I could see the apple and something was different. So I walk over to the apple. It's still in the relatively the same position, sticking on the stick in the middle of the stump. But it literally looked like something had picked it up, taken a bite out of it, and stuck it back into the stump. It looked like a huge human bite. Now I'm blown away, right? Yeah. So I take a couple of photos of the apple. I still have them. I can certainly send them to you guys if you'd like to see them. I took a couple of pictures. I sent them to my co-host, Wayne, from That Bigfoot Podcast. We hadn't even started the show at this point. He was just hosting the Sasquatch or the Paranormal Odyssey podcast for me, which he still does. And I send it to Wayne because I trust him. And I said, look, dude, I gave him no context. I said, tell me what's going on with this apple. And it was kind of mushy. It had a little bit of mold beginning because it'd been out there in the elements for about 3 days at this point. And he texted me back and he said, it looks like you took a big bite out of a nasty apple. And I said, okay, just know I didn't take a bite out of the apple. And then I explained it to him and he's like, holy shit, dude, what could do that? I don't know. Could it have been an ungulate? Could it have been a deer? I don't know how it would have done it. It's hard to explain. And I've done videos there. If you follow me on Instagram at Bigfoot BKS, you'll see this. There's videos of it. There's pictures of the apple on my social media because I eventually put it out there for everybody to see because it's weird, right? It looks like a human bite out of the apple. And of course, when I put it out there, people were like, oh yeah, you know, some homeless guy walked up on your property and bit your apple and stuck it back into the
stomach. Yeah. Why did he put it back in? That's what
I'm like. Why wouldn't you take it?
And I'm like, no, you'd have to see the layout of our property and our land. You don't do that on people's property in North Carolina. You don't come
That's
on
a very good property point. Unless you're invited, right?
But even if it was Bigfoot, why didn't he take the whole apple?
I don't know. I can't explain.
It's kind of strange.
It is one of the weirdest things.
He was just giving you a hint, or he's teasing you.
It could have been an intelligent tease. He knew your camera wasn't out there and said, gotcha, or something, you know, in that way.
I don't know. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced. And we've never had anything like that since. I mean, I've basically stopped putting the gifting stuff out. I tried it for quite a while after that and nothing else really happened. There's a rock that's been out there forever. It's got a little heart on it. We actually took it off. We had lost one of our dogs a couple of years ago and I took it and put it on the gifting stump and nothing's happened, but we had some weird experiences. I went on an expedition back in October of last year. I went up to Radium, BC and went out with Todd Standing. If anybody's into the Bigfoot stuff, you know who Todd Standing is. Yes. So I went out for 7 days with Todd and that's one of the things we would do nightly is go out and put apples in his gifting area. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times we had apples taken. And it's kind of strange. I can't really explain it. I don't know why they would be biting an apple and sticking it back in the tree. I don't know.
Well, Cindy might have an idea right there.
Fresh apple. You know, and that's one of the funny things about it because Todd is very anal about that. If an apple's damaged or if it falls on the ground, he won't put it back up. He always puts fresh apples out. And I'm thinking, does Sasquatch really care if they really exist and they're eating your apples? Do they really care if they're brand new and fresh? I don't know, but that's just his theory.
Maybe they want Red Delicious on Monday and Granny on Tuesday. You know,
I'm a Granny Smith guy, but this was a Red Delicious.
Well, being from the South, I recognized another Granny Smith fan right there. So
Granny Smith, all the way, my friend.
It is a very, very good, and you can use it for a lot of different things. Who would have thought we would have been talking about apples on today? You never know what you're going to get on Chasing Prophecy, everybody. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah.
But one thing, let me ask sort of like the psychology behind this to you. Do you think, you mentioned being in law enforcement, and that's very rigorous training. You know, I've heard you mention Occam's razor and you need evidence and things like that because evidence points you to the answer, not your, you know, feeling. So do you think that helps or hurts you in the world of Sasquatch?
It has definitely been a double-edged sword because there's so many people who listen to my show and I am so thankful for, I have a huge audience of people that tune in week after week and they are phenomenal. But there's so many times I've gotten, particularly on social media, in some cases, it's been more of a Reddit thing. I call Reddit sort of the bunghole of social media, but it's not my favorite place. But it's sometimes a necessary evil for me to get involved in Reddit. I had no idea what Reddit was until probably 6 months ago, really. I wasn't into it. Somebody sent me an email and said, there's a subreddit about my show on there. And that's kind of when I went down the rabbit hole on it. But in a nutshell, there's a lot of people who want me to pick a side. There's some, and I get it. You know, people listen to the show.
Yeah.
They want me to pick a side and stick in a lane, but it's very difficult for me because I go back and forth. And I've said this recently on that Bigfoot podcast again, when Wayne and I are talking about some of these things. I consider myself an intelligent person, somewhat intelligent person. And that's what people do. You form hypotheses, you form opinions, and then you have to be willing to change those hypotheses and opinions based on new information. So I'm constantly getting inundated with new information.
Yeah.
And I have to update my hypothesis based on that, or I'm just sticking to the same old narrative all the time. And I just don't do that. So I've always been 50-50 on the existence of Bigfoot, even through my experiences, even some of the weird things that I experienced up in Radium, which really pushed me more towards the existence of these creatures. I think I possibly interacted with them a couple of times in that Radium expedition, but I didn't see one. And until I do, I can't be 100% convinced that they exist outside of believing the majority of, I have friends like Cliff Berrickman is a really good friend of mine from Finding Bigfoot, and Cliff swears up and down he's had a couple of experiences where he saw these things, and I have no reason to distrust what Cliff tells me. I mean, he wrote the foreword to my new book.
Yeah.
So when you have conversations with people that you know and trust, Doug Hychek comes to mind. He's another one of those people that has had many at the Snell Grove Lake Cabin. He's had some really hair-raising experiences with Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. I trust Doug implicitly. I just haven't had that experience myself. So it can be a double-edged sword for me needing the evidence to prove out my hypothesis and other people's hypothesis and their assertion that these things are real. So I stick to my guns, and I've moved the needle more towards, I used to say 5 days out of seven. I'm pretty convinced there's something phenomenon. I'm about 6 days out of seven at this point that there's something there. I'm just not sure exactly what it is, but until I see one, I just can't fully commit, you know, seven out of seven and say, yeah, they're real.
Brian, I'm going to have you, sorry, Jenny, I'm going to have you back real quick here and throw a PSA out. Cliff was one of my idols, you know, in the way he approached everything with a professional manner and, you know, watching him on TV and everything, he's allowed it to be okay in my mind. So he's, you know, it's great that you're friends with him. You know, I just wanted to give him a shout out too. He's a wonderful, you know, he's never heard of me, but just know, you know,
he does.
Yeah, now he does. But now he does. You know, he was a, you know, he was an influence of me. But anyway, to get back to that, I got your back here a little bit with that, because it is difficult, because when you're in this field and you, is it or isn't it, we have to be more skeptical than the skeptics, because we can't throw that blanket out there. We can't throw that blanket of, I believe everything, because we're only going to get ourselves in trouble. And the last thing we can do as hosts, content creators, or even experts, research, whatever, is lose that credibility, because not everything is Bigfoot. Not everything is paranormal. Not everything is a UFO. But, you know, when we have the ones that you know, when we have the ones that do provide that evidence, those are the ones we're going to have to make that leap on and things like that. So I just had to get in there and say that. Sorry to cut you off, Jenny.
No, I was just going to ask him if he thought there was a lot of people think it's a UFO connection, something.
That's a very good point.
Or do you believe it's from the sky, or do you think it's like interdimensional or from a different realm or something, or a portal?
No, I am definitely in the flesh and blood camp. I have always been there, probably always will be. You know, I've had tons of people on the show that have had some really strange experiences, and I've always tried to, cops like to check boxes. Most people like to check boxes. So I would always separate and compartmentalize some of those things. You know, when somebody's telling me, hey, they've got Bigfoot activity on their property, yet they're seeing UFOs fly over, sometimes in right before experiences, sometimes during, and sometimes right after, I would just say, oh, that's weird. You got a lot of weird stuff going on. Yeah. And I would compartmentalize and separate.
You want to see the evidence. You want to see something.
Him getting off the UFO.
And I've actually had interviews with people who claim to have seen Bigfoot getting onto and off of
alien craft.
Near you, or?
It's run the gamut of all of those things. But okay. And I cover this in Sasquatch Unleashed, The Truth Behind the Legend, my new book. I talk a lot about that, because I think eventually, as a content creator and anybody who listens to my show, I've had people on the show that claim to have had sex with a female Sasquatch. I cover the gamut. Okay. I struggled.
Well, how was it?
Well, according to him, she was a 10 out of 10. I struggled with putting that out there, because I do take this very seriously. And I know those stories are out there. I think that was his experience. Even if it happened in his own brain, I think it happened to him in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But I struggle with that, because I do take this very seriously, right? But
how does that come to your mind first, to have sex with it when you first see it? I'm sorry.
he was in his early teens, I think, early 20s, something like late teens, early 20s.
That explains part of it.
that was part of his explanation. But, you know, I think you have to eventually pick a lane. And that's one of the things that I sort of close out the book talking about, is all of those things are fine, but I think we have to choose a path. And I think we have to separate the high strangeness from the flesh and blood. And we have to pick a lane in order to move this ball down the field. And I've always been a flesh and blood sort of person. I've never been able to, even after some of the conversations I've had recently that have made me scratch my head and sort of reconsider this. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to somebody just the other day during an interview, and he said, look, you know, we haven't really gotten very far with the flesh and blood part of this, even though there is evidence. And I can talk a little bit about evidence that I've even found here on the property of late, just this past summer. And of course, people find footprints. They find other things left behind by these creatures. And it's a very flesh and blood thing. And I was arguing with this guy back and forth, saying, you know, if these things are extraterrestrial, or they are coming in from portals. Why are they hunting deer? Why are they leaving footprints? Why are they making structures? Why are they doing wood knocks? All these things that are associated. And his answer was, maybe they're a little bit of both. So, you know, I like to be wrong. I love to be challenged. I don't mind being wrong, but I'm sticking in the flesh and blood camp because I've had too many conversations with people like Cliff. You know, if you, I sat and had dinner with Cliff Berrickman and Dr. Jeff Meldrum last summer when we were doing a speaking gig out in Idaho. And I'm like, you can't sit and have dinner and talk to those guys and not walk away from that conversation at least believing on some level that Sasquatch could exist. And if it does, it is a flesh and blood creature. So that's kind of where I rest. And I was on social media a little while ago talking to somebody about the footprint evidence and Meldrum's obsession with, you know, we got to move on from this because he's just obsessed with the footprints. And I said, look, this is about the only thing we really have when it comes to evidence. And that's one thing. I've cast probably 5 sets of footprints at this point on my property and around it on my neighbor's property here, just in our general area. And the first evidence I saw of a possible Sasquatch print, I didn't cast it because I wasn't doing Bigfoot stuff. We were just out hiking in the woods. And I came across this little area where there was some standing water. It wasn't a creek per se, but it was an area we hadn't been on the property. We'd never hiked. There's still places on our property we haven't hiked to this day. But we were hiking in this new area, and I looked down and I saw what looked like a footprint. And I joked. I said, I wasn't even going to bring my phone on this outing. I was completely checking out of work. We were just out to enjoy the woods. And I looked and I thought, that looks like a footprint. That is so cool. I said, it's a pareidolia footprint, right? I'm making myself out, making myself think it's a footprint
out of it. Yep.
So I take my phone out and I get close to this print, quote unquote print, to take a photo of it because I'm just curious. And I start seeing toes and I count 5 toes and I see there's an impression. It looks like it slid a little bit. And I'm thinking, holy shit, this is probably a footprint. So I take a couple of pictures and we move on. And I found some really weird things that day. I found some tree structures and we found a rock stack at the back of our property, which was interesting. There's pictures of this stuff in the book, by the way, if you guys want to take a look at it. So fast forward, I kind of forgot about it. I'd posted it and let people see it. I'd sent it to a couple of people. I think I texted Doug Highcheck and sent it to him. And Doug said, that looks like a footprint, guy. I mean, it either looks like a footprint or even possibly a handprint from a Sasquatch. And I'm thinking, okay, all right. So fast forward to this past summer, I was at a speaking gig with Cliff and we went out for a drink afterwards and I handed my cell phone and I'm saying, look at these photos, dude. And Cliff's looking through and he said, what's this? And I said, oh, that's like a pareidolia footprint I found. It looks really cool, right? And he said, dude, that's a Sasquatch footprint if I've ever seen one. And I'm thinking, oh. And his first thing is, he said, did you cast it? And I said, no, dude, it was in water. It had been raining for days before. It rained for 3 days after. I didn't have any casting material. I, of course, didn't cast it. And he said, that's one of the coolest footprints I've ever seen. Oh, man. Wow. Of course. But I've cast other prints since then, because if you know Cliff at all, he tells you to cast everything. I have cast some horrible footprints. They look like gnarled bunches of nothing. But it's evidence, it's data, you know, no matter what it turns out like, it's all data. So I have cast everything since then. If I think anything even remotely looks like it's possibly something, I cast it, and I have continued to do that. So there is evidence left behind. I mean, I found what I believe to be some really good footprints. Probably the last set that I cast were late last year. I think it's probably been 3 or 4 months ago at this point. The pictures actually made it in the book. I was glad to find them before I got the book published, but they turned out really good. They're like, it's like 15 inches, I think, and 7.5 inches across. Wow. And some huge footprints, 60, 70 yards from our house. So it's some weird stuff, man.
Yeah.
Cindy wants to know, have you seen any bedding? Like, I'm not sure what she means by the scat.
I've never found what I believe to be Bigfoot scat. No, we definitely have some big cats here in North Carolina that they say don't exist, but we've definitely found that on our property. As far as the bedding areas, no, I found what looks like it could possibly be some sort of a nesting area in the woods here. it's hard to say. It's pretty subjective. I covered that in the book. I actually talk a little bit about the known primate behavior, and we know that some large primates do make nests in certain cases. You have the Olympic Project out in the Pacific Northwest in the Washington area. Those guys out there, Shane Corson and those guys, they've been on that nesting area for 5 or 6 years at this point. And they're pretty convinced that there are nests in that area, and they're coming up on this 5-year cycle. They believe that they're being built about every 5 years. So they're looking in a new area to possibly, hopefully, come across some new nests. But no, I've never really seen outside of just maybe Bigfoot on the brain. I don't really think that's what's going on here on the property. Some interesting stuff, but I don't know that it would be considered a nest. No.
5 years, huh? Must appreciate.
Yeah. So you're pretty confident they're from Earth, or I know you said you wanted the physical. So you're pretty confident they're
you're not in the humanoid camp.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I could be completely wrong, but I haven't seen anything that would convince me otherwise. It makes more sense to me scientifically, just it being some sort of a leftover relic hominoid of some sort versus something that's coming in and out of portals.
So you think it's just something from evolution, or could it be like something like splicing of genes or something that man-made, maybe like from, you know, some like laboratory somewhere like the island of Dr.
Yeah, a lot of people have, Cliff's one of those people. He's in sort of the Paranthropus camp. I think he thinks it's some sort of an offshoot of a Paranthropus. I think it's more of probably Gigantopithecus americanus. Mm-hmm. If I had to apply that to something, possibly Gigantopithecus blackie, but I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's all subjective. We don't even know that they really exist. Let's be honest.
That's true. Be 100%
honest. I've seen some pretty compelling things. The Patterson-Gimlin film is pretty compelling to me. The Freeman Village is very compelling to me. I've seen a couple of other. We just did a show. We actually recorded it yesterday for that Bigfoot podcast. Wayne and I are looking into the IMAX footage from 2001. If you're not familiar with that, go to YouTube and type in IMAX footage. It's very compelling. Thinker Thunker actually had this guy on, the cinematographer who since passed on, William Reeve, I believe was his name, who actually filmed that footage for this movie, this documentary they were making. And it definitely wasn't a crew member. It wasn't some random guy out there. I mean, he dispelled all of this. He was there behind the camera. He filmed this. And he said, no, it's not. It's not a bear. It's not a person. So there's some pretty compelling stuff out there. You know, the Freeman footage is one of those things that's probably held up there second to the PG film. And I've become friends with Michael Freeman, Paul Freeman's son, who filmed the Freeman footage back in the early 90s. I think it was 92 he filmed it. I always get that wrong. So, Michael, if you're listening, it's either 92 or 94. I'm almost positive it's 92. But I talk about the Freeman footage in the book, and Michael was gracious enough to send me quite a few of his father's original photos that I included in the book of some of him casting some of those casts that he's famous for in the blues. And if you've seen Michael's book, The Freeman Bigfoot Files, we did that book a year or so ago. One of the things that they did was Doug Hychek and Alex, his son, and even Cliff has worked on his own version, I think, of enhancing the Freeman footage. If you haven't seen that footage enhanced and slowed down and looped, you can see this thing. It looks like a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, walking over to a tree and picking up what looks like a baby Bigfoot and putting it on its waist and carrying it off. You can see it in the original. It's a lot harder to see in what you can find on the internet, interwebs, on the YouTube. But if you look at the version that Michael's included in his book, it is pretty compelling. It was really the feature of what it was. We did that Idaho Squatch Con last year. It was me, Cliff Berrickman, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and Michael Freeman. We did a panel discussion and showed the video to people, and people were completely amazed by it. It's pretty compelling stuff if you haven't seen it.
Awesome. Well, Brian, we have a question from another Brian. Do you feel these creatures are opportunists or omnivores like bears? /omnivores like bears.
Brian is my buddy from right here in Tennessee. He's been a longtime supporter of Sasquatch Odyssey. I appreciate that, man. Good question. I believe they're very much like any other animal. I think they're very much like bears. I think they would be opportunist, and I certainly believe that they're omnivores. It would be very difficult for them to be completely carnivorous. Mm-hmm. I think it's highly unlikely that you would have the ability to do that. I think they would have to consume berries and roots, possibly vegetation, as well as meat, probably less than the vegetation, if we're being honest, more like bears. Bears don't eat a ton of meat. It's mostly berries and other things that they survive on. So if they get to a kill or get to scavenge, bears are very good scavengers. They'll take kills from coyotes and other things. So I think they're definitely opportunistic and omnivores for sure.
Excellent. Yeah. So, hold on. We have a question from Cindy, and very fitting, her little picture. Have they mind spoke with you yet, or have you heard about them, the telepathic part of communication?
Oh boy. This is certainly one of those slippery slopes for me. No, I've talked about it plenty of times. And again, I'll go back to Todd Standing. That is his newest thing, is working on the mind speak that he claims he has with these creatures. And I've talked to plenty of people who say they've experienced that. I believe that there is usually a more mundane scientific explanation for what most people are experiencing. When you get in situations like that and you're high stress, you have a lot of adrenaline going, you're scared shitless in the woods because you think you're hearing something, you do see something. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot going on. And I've had conversations with people like Survivor Man Les Stroud when I had Les on the show. That's one of the things we talked about. I think he told maybe three different incidents where he had been out in the woods and he believed that he had a telepathic communication and or quote unquote mind speak with a Sasquatch. And I'm just not so sure that's the case. And I've always told famously the story when I was a police officer, did a lot of traffic stops. I did DUI for like almost 3 years, and it's traffic stop after traffic stop after traffic stop. Probably arguably one of the most dangerous things you can do as a police officer.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And there was one particular evening I pulled over this car that just, I blue lit them. They kept going. They made a couple of turns. They went behind this building. Before I knew it, we were in this dark area behind the building. There was at least five people I could see in the car. I knew something wasn't right about the situation. And before I got out of my patrol car, something just, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. The hair on my arm stood up. And something tells me, don't approach the driver's side of this car. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. I had my spotlight. I had my takedown lights. I lit the car up. They couldn't see what was going on. I just backed behind my patrol car. I walked around to the passenger side of the vehicle. I actually drew my weapon out. I had my weapon at the side, and I shined my flashlight into the car. And the driver of the car that I'd pulled over had a pistol in his hand, and he was looking to his left, waiting on me to walk up to the driver.
Wow.
And everybody in the car was looking that way because he had a pistol and he was going to shoot me.
So,
was that mind speak? I don't think he was mind speaking to me. I know Sasquatch wasn't mind speaking to me. So I compare that story to what people may experience in some of the situations that they have in the woods. I think we have a sixth sense that,
yeah,
we need to listen to. It's that gut feeling. It's that voice in your own head, so to speak, mm-hmm, that tells you there's danger. And I've talked to plenty of people that said, you know, something, you know, I believe that Bigfoot told me not to come up here. Don't walk up this way. You know, I hear, don't come this way. Well, was it really a Bigfoot mind speaking, or were you telling yourself that because there might have been a mountain lion up there that you were detecting with your sixth sense that you didn't know necessarily any other way? So it may not be the exact same, but I've always sort of equated it to that. And again, I could be wrong. If anybody has proof that would prove that theory wrong, I'm certainly willing to listen. A lot of people claim to have those mind speak experiences. Again, I have a great amount of respect. If you guys have ever watched Survivor Man, he's done a lot of stuff in Bigfoot. I have a lot of respect for Les. If you listen to my show, he opens up the show. He's in my intro introducing my show. So I have a lot of respect for Les, but I'm not so sure that he had a mind speak situation versus he might have just had a sixth sense situation and he was talking to himself in his own head. I don't know.
Could be.
It very well could be. There's a school of thought that the five senses that we have are where you pay predominant attention to, because that's to keep you alive. Sight, smell, you know, food, you know, all that kind of stuff. But there is a school of thought that we do have others. We're just not as in tune with them, such as the instinct of survival, which it sounds like, you know, you had picked up on a whiff of that, especially in that traffic stop where, you know, you're that 50-50 decision. I think you would make every single time, because your body and your mind and your senses were telling you go this way, not the other way.
And if I were inclined to do that, and I'm very into, again, I've had paranormal experiences. I've had experiences living in haunted houses and hearing voices and things that aren't supposed to exist. I've seen UFOs, and I'm in some ways predisposed to believe in those things. And I do believe in all of those things, but at the end of the day, I have to come back to the science of, I just believe that it was, you know, and some people would say it was my guardian angel that told me to walk around that side of the car.
Yeah.
Again, it could be. I'm not dismissing that by any stretch of the imagination, but that's how I process it. And I tend to look at things. And again, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I don't mind being wrong at all. I just like being proven to be wrong in my hypothesis. So.
Well, there you have it. Brian, where can people get in touch with you or get your books?
The best place to do all of that stuff, obviously, Sasquatch Odyssey, True Crime Odyssey, That Bigfoot Podcast, and our new show, Backwoods Horror Stories. You can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. We have a YouTube channel for Sasquatch Odyssey. The Backwoods Horror Stories has a YouTube channel. Our sister show, Paranormal Odyssey, that's hosted by Wayne, my co-host on That Bigfoot Podcast, is also on YouTube. You can get those anywhere you listen to podcasts. The best place to get the book, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it anywhere fine books are sold. You can, if you want an autographed copy directly from me, I personalize those and send them out. Everything is on ParanormalWorldProductions.com. That's our website. That's the easiest place to get everything. You can contact me there if you want to come on the show, if you've had an experience, you just want to say hello, whatever the case may be, you can get all that on the website.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for everything.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I've had a blast.
Hey, we'll have you back on. Thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, he was good. And, you know, before we get into the bridge here a little bit, I just had a thought, Jenny. I wonder if we could reach out to him and see if he has any cop buddies with paranormal experiences. I would love to get a law enforcement take on a call. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Do they ever see any, or any kind of paranormal?
I mean,
I'm sure I know in Pittsburgh they do. I mean, I know, Dan Gordon, he talked about a lot of stuff, sightings from Bigfoot that were from law enforcement.
I just think it would be great, maybe a panel of them. But what do you think about this tragedy today?
I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I didn't sleep well last night, and I just happened to look at my ex, you know, formerly known as Twitter, and I seen it. I go, oh my God. When I saw the video, I was like, oh my God, but there was just another accident over in Maryland where a tractor trailer went over the side.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's spooky. It really is.
That area is more of my side of PA than yours. And you've spoken about the Chesapeake Bay Bridge
and how
yeah, that's another one that's just long, long way that you're open water. But seeing all of that and then, you know, watching the live video right before it went down and the cars that just made it off of.
That's how I was watching those cars. If they only known. Yeah. They just watched one, you know, two, three and five seconds later, the bridge goes down. And it was they're saying it was the cargo ship's fault. Apparently, they've had warnings.
Well, yeah. I mean, we saw the power go out twice. We saw it hit. I'm not a marine expert. I don't know if it was in its shipping lane or not. But, you know, you gotta have accountability, and it's a crappy situation for all, right? You know, I don't believe anybody wanted to do that, but you know, the accountability has to come somewhere, because you can't have that on camera happen, let alone off camera, but it's just that much worse.
Yeah. It was a very scary situation. I mean, there's so many things going on right now. Oh, And getting back to the eclipse, I mean, I can't believe if all the schools here are closed on that day. It's like, no,
That's so odd.
I talked to a couple of people and they said it was because they don't want liability. I don't know if they mean by because the kids might go blind at looking at it. I don't know. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, I get. I mean, it's run by insurance companies, so I'm sure maybe the insurance company for the school told them to take off.
Yeah, and I think too because I know the rows will be probably jammed because people want to get closer to it where there's totality of it. So maybe that's why. I don't know. We've never had one like that. So maybe that's all it is people are just like, well, roads might be jammed. I don't know.
People outside in the street, whatnot.
Yeah, people having parties and whatever.
Well, just look at what happened in 2017. It wasn't that long ago.
What happened in 2017?
That was the last eclipse that went the other way.
Did anything happen? I mean, did anybody go crazy? Because I remember seeing it.
We might have moved into another dimension.
Maybe these glasses, these are from 20. We got to see it. It didn't get dark. Yeah.
They're expired. You got to throw them away. They're past the expiration date.
Oh, really? They don't work?
Oh, I don't know. I was just saying.
Really? Is there an expiration date on them?
You're going to go blind a different way than the kids. Jesus.
I don't know. It's just, Bigfoot, cargo ships going into bridges.
Apple.
So much stuff going on out there. You know, I don't know about Bigfoot. I mean, I don't think I ever saw Bigfoot, but I did see something outside once.
If he wants to, or if we have him back on, which I would be totally for that, I would bring a little more into the interdimensional realm, just maybe to get a good discussion, about that. Because, there's a lot to be said. And that is the major fork in the road that people take when talking about cryptids and Bigfoot.
And we're over time. So thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. Thank you. For sharing your thoughts. Hope to see you next week. Make sure you save the share of the live stream. Put on, give us some views. But thanks again for tuning in.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.